Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name's Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
What's happening?
Coming to you from a sunny Los Angeles. And today we're chatting all about recovery. So we're actually going to do a part one and a part two. Part one's going to be about recovering post-workout, you know, how to speed that up, how to make sure you're taking care of yourself, especially if you're working out a little bit harder. And even if you're not, you know, just making sure you feel good overall. And then part two, we're going to talk about tips for recovering post-surgery, because I'm sure, you know, as we go through life, we all deal with different types of surgery.
Also injuries as well.
Injuries as well. So we're going to cover that in part two. Before we get into today's episode, Chris is going to read a five-star review from one of our listeners.
Been following these two for years, beyond proud of the content and more so the quality of content they both put out. Super rad to watch them develop their brand together, get married, and live out this dream inspiring so many. So happy to follow along. This NBC Titan approves. Well, thank you. That's a beautiful thing.
Thank you so much. If you guys could take a moment to leave a review for Chris and I, it really means so much and it really helps keep us going and motivates us even more to keep the powerful episodes coming your way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So today we're actually sipping on some green juice by Organifi, and that leads me to my exciting announcement that we have our first podcast sponsor, which is a big deal because we are super picky. You can ask our managers how annoying our standards are, but it's totally worth it to hold out our standards for, you know, our integrity and making sure you're taken care of. And one of the things I love about this green juice is it's actually a green juice. So the other stuff on the market is totally BS. A lot of it is fruit juice disguised as green juice, and it has a ton of sugar and also a lot of the vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients you'd find in that fruit normally is not intact from the way it's processed. But with Organifi, it's the real deal.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, one of my main things is taste, and some of these green juices do not taste well. And I start my day off with these things. So it took me a while to find the good one, but once we got it, then I was just sticking with Organifi, and then just out of the blue, they reach out asking us to sponsor, which is a beautiful thing. It was just like all the stars were aligned in terms of the timing, in terms of all the pieces coming together. So another thing is the ingredients. I mean, you know, Amanda talked about it being organic, but I like the individual ingredients and the benefits that they bring. So obviously you have, you know, the matcha green tea. So that's why I like to start off in the morning, gives you a nice little kick. I still do a little coffee. It's not my sole source of caffeine, but I definitely like to take that because of the matcha green tea. You also have spirulina in there, which I love because it's been shown to lower plasma triglyceride levels significantly. You also have, there's a certain marker of oxidative stress that it showed a significant reduction into. And also it's been shown to increase the certain plasma adiponectin levels, which is involved in regulating glucose levels as well as like fatty acid breakdown and things. So that's just some of the benefits of just one ingredient. I mean, you also have chlorella, and chlorella in a study was shown to exhibit remarkable changes in total cholesterol, triglycerides, lutein and zeaxanthin, and A-carotene levels. And that was compared to a control group. So this was a randomized trial. Another ingredient I want to talk about is ashwagandha, which I love this. I've been taking ashwagandha separately for years because of its ability to reduce cortisol. It's been shown to help with better sleep quality because of the reduction in cortisol. Also, another study showed that there was an 18% greater increase in DHEA and 14% greater increase in testosterone compared to placebo. So, and I think the overall mechanism is just the reduction in cortisol. And so that changes the cortisol, the testosterone to cortisol ratio. And so, I mean, that's just three of the ingredients in this. And it's got a bunch of other ones. I mean, it's got a prebiotic powder, turmeric, wheatgrass or wheatgrass juice powder. I mean, this stuff is just, it packs a nice healthy punch in the morning.
Right. And I've tried some other green juices that Chris got me in the past, and I totally gagged every time I had them. I appreciate the gesture, babe, but yeah, this is where it's at. And actually today you can get 15% off with the code MASTERS with an S, because you guys are the masters of your own health. And you can go to Organifi.com/masteryourhealth to get all of their wonderful products. Right now we were talking about the green juice, but they also have a protein powder, red juice. We'll talk about some of these other products in future episodes, but we're really excited to be on board with this brand.
Absolutely.
Without further ado, let's get into today's episode.
Yeah, let's get after it. So today we are talking about recovery, and we want to do two parts in this podcast series. So it's going to be part one, just talking about workout and training recovery. And then part two, because I've dealt with a couple issues in the past, I'm about to have surgery tomorrow. So we were thinking about doing part two, just strictly geared towards injuries and surgery recovery. So we're going to split that up. I mean, there's going to be some carryover in terms of certain protocols with these, but we decided that it'd probably be a little bit easier just to separate them out, so we're not, you know, jumping back and forth between the two mechanisms.
Right. I'm going to be taking care of Chris after his surgery, you know.
Better.
Feeding him some soup.
So here's the thing. I mean, when you work out, you're physically breaking down your body, your muscle fibers, your immune system, your connective tissues, everything is taking a hit. If you don't recover, you're just breaking your body down over and over and over again. And that can, if you keep doing that for a long period of time, that can actually lead to injuries, and then you're out of the game, and then you're playing catch up, right? And skimping on recovery can lead to symptoms of overtraining. I mean, even if it doesn't cause an injury, it can lead to overtraining symptoms such as like decreased performance. That's a good indicator. If you go into the gym and you're starting to actually decrease the weight that you're using from the previous weeks, that's a good sign that your nervous system might be overtaxed. There's certain other things like elevated blood pressure, poor sleep could be an indication that your cortisol is too high chronically, and decreased immune strength. So if you're getting sick very often, there could be too much of the sympathetic nervous system being activated. And just overall general irritability. These are all symptoms that you could be overtrained. If you're working out like 5, 6, 7 days a week, more than that, and they're all intense training sessions, we'll get into this, but you may want to look into deloading and backing off a little bit. And I guarantee you your long-term strength, health, performance will benefit from that.
Also, just make sure to honor what stage you are in life. Because I remember when I was younger, I feel like I could probably handle a bit more. Now that I've gotten older, you know, I've changed up my training technique. Although I also think when I was younger, I was a little naive and still didn't have a good training program set up. But just, you know, honor where you are in life, and also notice, you know, what other things you have going on that might be taxing your body aside from working out, and factor that into your routine and how you plan this out, and really pay attention to how you feel.
Yeah, extending off of her point on knowing what stage you're at, it's not just what age you're at, it's also the level of your training, right? So if you're just getting back into it, you don't need to be following an Instagram bodybuilder and following their training program. You know, you could start off with something slow and build your way up and progressively overload, and not just immediately just tax your body and you're sore for the next 4 days, and then you're able to maybe eke out another workout one more time that week. Do it smart and be strategic about it. And we can actually talk about ways that you can periodize your program to be smart about this, and to and I'll explain what periodize means, but ways to actually strategically approach this, that way you're not just throwing it together 5 minutes before you go into the gym and then playing catch up afterwards.
I feel like you're calling me out a little bit though, because I did buy some of those Instagram workouts and they were just overkill. Like some of the ones out there are not good.
You had one where you're doing like 40 sets per muscle group, and it's just like unless you're stopping halfway through your set, there's no way you're doing that without completely overtaxing your body. Because just as a side note, you know, it kind of depends on your level of training, your intensity of training, all this stuff, but most people will argue that when you're getting over like 20 intense sets per week, let's say 20 to 24, I think more than 24, you're kind of getting into the range of like you're surpassing your maximal recoverable amount of, it's like maximal recoverable volume essentially, which is the greatest amount of volume you can do within a week and still recover for your next workout. So that's a little bit too scientific. We're not going to get into all that, like to the minimal training and then the whole range up to the maximal, but we will touch on that because it's applicable with the periodizing the program. No matter how you're exercising, nutrition, hydration, sleep are all main pillars of recovery. And what that means, amongst other things on this list, but primarily it's eating ample protein, high quality carbs, consuming at least half your body weight in ounces of water, and aiming at, you know, 8 hours of quality sleep at night. It's not just spending that 8 hours in bed, but actually getting the quality sleep. And there's certain things that you can do to track that. Like some people can wear the watches. We wear the Oura Ring. I really like the Oura Ring because it tracks so many different things. So there's a way to do that. But number one is sleep as first and foremost.
Right. You know, we talk about sleep on pretty much every episode, but if you're not getting a hint yet, hopefully this will be the sign. But research suggests that sleep deprivation can have a significant negative effect on performance and recovery. I mean, I don't really need a study to tell me that per se, because I know it. When I don't get good sleep, I feel it. I feel it during my workout. I just feel it throughout the day. I mean, Chris could probably vouch over here that I'm probably a little bit of a baby when I don't get enough sleep, but it is super important. And if for some reason you can't get a lot of sleep that night, you can considering adding in a nap that day. That's not going to make up in the long run for high quality sleep at night, but you know, fit it in where you can, make it a priority, set your bed up like a sleep sanctuary and try to wind down a little bit at night.
Yeah. And try to get in bed before midnight. I mean, actually probably ideal to get in bed before 11 p.m., but just because the release of growth hormone is greater before midnight. And obviously if you're training, that's what you want to do. That's what you want to prioritize. And so try to develop a good circadian rhythm and, you know, going to bed relatively early at night, waking up relatively close to the sun rising, and try to keep that same schedule every night, because that is also a key factor, going to bed and waking up at the same time.
Right.
So next one I want to cover is pretty obvious, but maybe some people don't know this. I know some people that I train with, because I go to Gold's down in Venice, and I see some of these guys here day in and day out, 7 days a week. But I always like to tell people, especially if you're not if you're not dialed in and you're not experienced, then don't train intensely more than 2 days in a row. So you can go for 2 days and say you do, you know, like a heavy leg day and then a heavy upper body day. That day three should be either rest or an active rest, like low intensity, steady state cardio, where you're just doing walking or you're doing yoga, some light stretching, just some light work, but it should not be intense. You should actually give your nervous system, your muscles, everything a chance to recover.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely notice that myself. Like by day three, I'm like, I cannot do an intense workout. Like if you're good at listening to your body, you'll realize that it's probably like, it doesn't feel good to continue on that day.
Yeah, it depends on what split you have. I mean, sometimes people can do like say legs on day one, chest and back day two. And then since arms and shoulders are relatively light loads, you know, if you want to do high rep, low weights, things like that, you can do that. But for the most part, some people would just recommend that you take that rest and then fit it in later on in your split. So, I mean, I've done it sometimes, but I try to follow that rule.
So you think it'd be a bad idea to take three Orange Theory classes 3 days in a row?
Absolutely. Unless you're half-assing.
That class is so intense.
It really is.
That's true. Unless you're like just walking on the treadmill.
Yeah.
But if you're
actually doing, because they have, you know, the sprints in that workout, if you're actually doing the sprints and you're not dogging it, then no, I would not recommend that at all. You're doing yourself a great disservice by working out that intensely all the time. I mean, I don't even think people need to be, if you're doing that workout correctly to where you're trying to maximize whatever their burn points, whatever it is, like we're trying to get up into the red. If you're doing it correctly, you shouldn't be able to do it 3 days in a row. And not only that, but you shouldn't be able to do it for that full hour. I mean, just going the full hour, if you're going intensely, that hour is a little bit too much. So I'm just saying that right now. In terms of now, if you want to maintain musculature, you want to reduce the amount of muscle loss, things like that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's still one of my favorite classes to mix in, but I definitely agree with you overall.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I feel great every time. I also feel super taxed every time too. So
yes, sometimes I'm like, can I get work done after like I do an Orange Theory class in the morning or like any really intense workout? But yeah, it's some good points.
Right. So number three we can talk about is doing a cool down after intense training. And this just allows your central nervous system to deregulate. It returns your heart rate to a normal resting rate and sets you up for a speedier recovery. And this can be anything just like some light stretching, you know, some non-incline walking on the treadmill or around your neighborhood, whatever you want to do. But just something that is going to taper off your level of effort and not just like, oh, I'm going to be intense and then I'm just going to walk out of the gym and not do anything else for the rest of the day and sit down. You're probably going to develop a lot more DOMS, which is delayed onset muscle soreness. So you'll probably have a little bit more muscle soreness and a longer perceived time of recovery than if you did a little bit of a light cool down.
So number four on our list is to drink some coffee. So I'm not complaining about this one. I'm like, yes, score.
Which surprises me. I actually, when I looked into this, I didn't know that coffee could drop your DOMS.
I know. I'm actually so happy you found this study. So one study published in the Journal of Pain showed that exercisers saw a drop in delayed onset muscle soreness when they drank some coffee. I mean, to all you coffee lovers out there, this is like the best news we've probably gotten all day. Again, we wouldn't encourage you to overdo it because coffee does, you know, the caffeine does increase cortisol and all that. But, and also you don't want to drink it too late in the day because then you won't get good sleep and that's going to mess with your recovery. So there's some key components there, but the good news is, you know, drink your coffee in the morning and don't overdo it and you'll probably be set up for success.
Yeah. It's not much. I mean, 6 ounces, we're not talking about a 12 ounce, you know, full strength coffee here. It's just a little
crack
bit
coffee,
right? Exactly.
So moving on to number five on our list is incorporating massages and foam rolling for reducing muscle soreness. Now it's not for the reasons that you would think, so it's not necessarily muscle recovery, but it does help with DOMS. I mean, this is good news for me because I love massages. There's like a fairly well-priced place right down the street from us. Now I haven't been able to go during COVID yet, but I am excited to incorporate some more massages. But unfortunately, it's not as conclusive as you'd like to see it in the studies. I think, Chris, you found one good study that kind of explained the issue here.
Yeah. So whether you're talking about foam rolling or muscle soreness, what it really does is that it seems to affect perceived recovery far more than actual recovery. So it can reduce pain perception. And so maybe it's the idea that it's reducing DOMS and it's reducing maybe just like your lack of mobility. You know how you feel like you have that reduced range of motion. You're walking around kind of like a zombie because like everything hurts to move. And so you try to limit those movement patterns. It's things like that. But in terms of a consensus in the scientific community, there's a lot of argument as to whether or not it gives you actual muscle recovery on the objective level, like in your actual muscle fibers. And so as of right now, I mean, we're not trying to tell you to not do it, because one of the huge things that we talk about with reduction of stress and recovery is certain protocols and mechanisms like this, like massages, like meditation, things like that. So if you're going to do something that's going to reduce your stress, make you feel better, give you a better sense of well-being, quality of life, all these things, and that's going to help with recovery in the overall, in the long run, because you're reducing cortisol and you're reducing stress. But in terms of helping the muscle fibers repair themselves, it does not do that in terms of what the literature suggests.
Right. Chris and I were talking before the episode and I told him, you know, in terms of, for me, like really taking the time to not do any work, to be off my phone, that's what I really enjoy about the 1 hour massage. And you're getting that human touch. It feels good. I typically sleep better that night. So that's why I really like to incorporate massages. And so overall, you would notice that maybe it does, like Chris said, help recovery long term, but not necessarily the muscle fiber.
Right. I mean, if you want to talk about one study with foam rolling. So it showed that a single session of foam rolling had no effect on recovery of MIVC, which is maximal isometric voluntary contraction, muscle swelling, ROM, and DOMS. And just to clarify, ROM is range of motion and DOMS is delayed onset muscle soreness. So like we said before, great for subjective feelings of pain and subjective feelings of reduction in stress, which can help your recovery. But in terms of helping you repair muscle fibers, I would not rely on it.
Next up on our list is low intensity steady state cardio, also known as LISS, which Chris and I often do in the form of walking. Chris has been incorporating a lot more walking lately, which I already did talking on the phone, but it's good to see him kind of get in the habit of literally walking to appointments.
Well, yeah, because I mean, Los Angeles is such a car culture, you know, I mean, there's been places, actually one of the best things I liked about being in Europe and in grad school was that everybody walked everywhere, you know, even though there were, there's public transportation everywhere, not as much car ownership and stuff like that, but just, it got me in the habit of, even though something is a mile and a half away, I'm still going to walk, because especially if I don't have the time restriction of needing to take the car. And it's like, oh, okay, well, if I got some time if I can listen to a podcast, get some things done. Most of the time I'll go on my walk, and that's actually when I like to practice my Duolingo, like to practice my second language. I do that on my walk. So I like to multitask in that aspect, but it's great because, you know, it's gentle enough to prevent you from further tearing your muscle fibers. So that's why it's great on a rest day. But it's also active enough to get your blood pumping. It brings oxygen, nutrients to the targeted area that, you know, will help you recover from your previous workout. It also clears out systemic waste and fluid buildup. So, I mean, there's just multiple benefits from just doing low intensity, steady state cardio.
Yeah, my favorite thing is to get on the phone and go for long walks. I do that. I could talk on the phone probably a little bit too long, mm-hmm. but it's a great time to take calls and, you know, stay active. Don't sit at your desk all day. It feels good to get a little movement pumping to your body, even not for recovery, just for overall health.
Yeah, and we are aware that not everybody that listens to us and follows Amanda on Instagram and all that stuff is a heavy trainer, right? Not everybody goes to the gym and has a training split and, you know, follows it like crazy. Some people, you know, just go to work and then come home, do a little bit of light workout. That's fine. I mean, just adding a little bit of walking in your day can make a drastic change to your overall fitness and health if you are predominantly sedentary anyway. So whether you use it as a recovery method or if that's your only method for working out and getting some activity, either way, get those steps in because it's all beneficial.
That's why I always say walking is underrated for sure.
Yeah. And also, you know, most people, you know, there's bodybuilders that even say that it's absolutely beneficial in terms of just clearing out some of the tightness. So say if you are a bodybuilder and all your only goal is that you want to put on muscle. Well, there's a lot of tightness that is involved with that because you have fixed ranges of motion with these bodybuilding movements and these exercises, and they can make you really tight. Well, this can kind of get you out of those fixed rigid movement patterns, get you back towards a more natural movement pattern. So it can help with your posture, your joint alignment, everything like that, that can be kind of thrown off a little bit with kind of chronically sore and tight muscles. Yeah. And speaking of sore and tight muscles, one thing that I had to start doing because, I mean, I was reluctant to do it because as a guy, I can't bring myself to take a bath. But, you know, Epsom salt baths are beneficial when you're extremely, extremely sore. And yeah, this is just one thing that I had to get over as, you know, just a personal mental block. Like every time as a man, like drawing a bath water and being like, nah, I'm just going to rinse it off, just jump in the shower. And so, but no, with Epsom salt baths or magnesium supplements, because that's what Epsom salt is made of. It's made from magnesium and sulfate, and, you know, which is known to increase relaxation, reduce inflammation, aid in muscle and nerve function. Magnesium is just, I mean, you cannot stop talking about how beneficial this is in terms of, especially if you're an athlete, because most athletes are deficient in magnesium, and actually up to 50% of the U.S. population is deficient in magnesium. So, and there's a reason for this, because it's involved in like over 300 essential biochemical reactions in the body. Some of these include like protein synthesis, testosterone production, insulin sensitivity, calcium absorption, and nervous system regulation. So many athletes who don't supplement with magnesium are deficient. So that is one thing that I would start doing. And if you wanted to be really detailed on it, I would go for either magnesium glycinate or magnesium citrate for in and around your workouts, and do magnesium threonate for before bed, because that is kind of geared towards the brain. So that's what I take. Additionally, magnesium can support, you know, healthy sleep, brain function, mood, metabolism, stress by way of lowering cortisol levels. I mean, if you're not taking magnesium right now, then you should really start. Another supplement you can take is tart cherry concentrate. And there's been several studies that have shown these benefits for your muscles. I mean, there's a 2011 study published in Medicine and Science and Sports Exercise Journal, and it examined the effects of cherry juice concentrate on well-trained athletes. And what this found is that the maximum voluntary contractions during recovery were significantly faster in tart cherry concentrate group versus placebo. And so the researchers concluded that cherry juice consumption did improve recovery of isometric muscle strength after an intensive workout. And one theory proposed by one of the researchers is that the high levels of polyphenols, and those include like flavonoids and anthocyanins, found in tart cherry juice helped lessen the oxidative damage induced by the exercise.
Wow, that's crazy.
Right. And another 2014 study concluded that tart cherry concentrate may indeed help decrease inflammation and oxidative stress induced by intensive exercise. So I mean, just again, just reiterating that it's not just in one isolated study. It's, you know, several of these studies that have shown this. So I personally drink tart cherry juice after my workout, you know, just a nice little boost of sugar, suppresses that cortisol, raises that insulin. So, and I try not to spike my insulin too much before the workout. So, so that's my protocol, but I have yet to try the tart cherry concentrate, but it's definitely on my list.
Yeah. I need to give that a try or like put that into a shake maybe with some other stuff. I wonder what would taste good. Maybe like a vanilla protein powder or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Got to try it out. So next on our list is to add in probiotics to your diet. So, you know, that could be like fermented foods or it could also be a supplement. And the deal here is that gut bacteria plays a key role in immune system function. About 80% of your immune system resides in the gut, which is crazy. Immune system doesn't just safeguard against illness. It also enables your body to tolerate the stressors in daily life. So, I mean, I guess that's why I'm such an optimist, because I eat so many probiotics.
That's got to be the reason.
That's got to be why. But no, remember that fermented foods like sauerkraut, kimchi, yogurt, coconut yogurt, all that stuff has great living probiotics in it.
Mm-hmm. And remember, you can take probiotic supplements towards specific goals, but the best way to build up your gut microbiome is just by eating a ton of veggies. So you're not only building it up with whole foods and veggies, but you're also feeding it with those prebiotics.
Absolutely. It's a good combo, you know, getting your veggies. Like I love a good salad with some sauerkraut or kimchi in it. Mm-hmm. I need to bring that back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So next on our list is to make sure you're getting enough protein. One way to incorporate more protein into your day is to make sure you have a post-workout protein shake. I love a good chocolatey post-workout protein shake. And Chris is a big fan of this. He's always emphasizing to have protein post-workout because it gives your muscles a quick shot of amino acids to jumpstart recovery.
Well, one thing that I do, I got to clarify because, you know, obviously we know that for a long time there was the post-workout protein window, right? That everybody was always talking about. That was a thing. But we know right now that that's a myth, but it kind of depends on the timing of your meal before. So with Amanda, she doesn't like to have a big breakfast before her workout. So she doesn't have this huge, you know, 30 grams of protein before her workout, like some people do, like I do. So I would actually recommend her getting actually adhering to the post-workout protein window more than somebody who, let's just say, ate a huge meal about an hour and a half before their workout. So it kind of just depends. So yeah, you don't need to actually get it within that half hour. So, but the studies that kind of debunked that still recommended a 1 to 2 hour maximum window after your workout. And it kind of depends on, like I said, it depends on what the feeding window was before. If you had like, say, 4 hours before your workout, you may want to actually adhere to the post-workout protein window, right? So even though that it's a myth that you don't, let's say you ate an hour and a half before your workout, that doesn't mean you got to speed on your way home to get to your protein shake because you forgot your shaker cup. But it's the exact opposite if you fasted before your workout. You're going to want to get those amino acids as close to your workout as possible.
Yeah, that's a super helpful tip. I mean, and I try to listen to you most of the time.
No, she doesn't.
So another tip for getting more protein in throughout your day would be to do it first thing in the morning. So to have a high protein breakfast. Chris likes steak and eggs. Usually I have eggs post-workout or a protein shake, but this will ensure that you don't start your day on like a high carb meal that spikes your insulin. So Chris is always telling me to avoid that. And I mean,
it's more like spiking your blood sugar to where you're going to be on that blood sugar roller coaster all day.
Right. I mean, and when you think about the typical breakfast that America encourages, it's like super sugary cereal, with some milk, which actually has a good amount of sugar itself naturally. Mm-hmm. So not a good start to your day.
Yeah. So not only start your day with it, but you can go ahead and end your day with it because it's also good. You can have those additional amino acids as you sleep. And so to further aid muscle repair. And this is obviously, it's crucial, especially if you're on a high protein diet, which we recommend, whether you're trying to build muscle or trying to lose fat, a high protein diet is beneficial for both of those things. So having some at the beginning of your day, at the end of your day, you can't hurt. And so next on our list is not going overboard with anti-inflammatories just to prevent muscle soreness. Listen, if you're working out, you're damaging your muscles. So soreness comes as an inevitable factor. You know, you're going to be sore sometimes if you're pushing yourself. So I really don't understand the people that pop ibuprofen all the time to prevent soreness. To me, that's like you want to have your cake and eat it too. So don't go overboard with inflammation, because it's actually a beneficial element to your training. It's a beneficial byproduct. So the inflammation is an important contributor to the training effect.
Right. And also the ibuprofen comment, it just reminds me of my dad, who was always like, any problem you had, Advil was the solution. You know, physical problem, emotional problem. Oh, you're not feeling Advil.
Right. And I mean, aside from the problems that things like ibuprofen and things like that, and they wreak havoc to your gut, you're also blocking some of that beneficial inflammation. So when you do a hard bout of exercise, you create microscopic damage to your muscle fibers, and that triggers inflammation. And that inflammatory response is the first step towards repairing the damage and bolstering your muscle fibers, so they'll become stronger the next time you work out. And the same thing happens to bones. The load placed on your bones, the increased load on top of what your body weight already is, placed on your bones during strength training, creates these tiny little divots in the weak areas of your bones. And the inflammation kicks off this process that fills in those weak areas with stronger bones. So you actually have this long demonstrable effect of people that weight train have with heavy loads have stronger bones than people who don't. And that's why weight training is also good for people who are aging to prevent osteoporosis and things like that. So it's crucial for that as well.
You'd be laughing right now. I'm singing that Kelly Clarkson song in my head. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Like, that's the type of mentality with the work. I don't think that's the top song on your list.
Yeah,
is
that
it?
Was not where my mind was at.
No, but I think it's a great point that, you know, you're doing some hard workout. You're pushing yourself. You're enduring a certain level of pain for benefit, and you really need to make sure you're reaping that benefit and not cutting off that inflammation.
Yeah. I mean, the studies show that reducing inflammation too much might actually blunt some of the gains you get from your workouts. And we can actually get into that later, because some of that also relates to cold therapy, like cryo and ice baths and things like that. And studies actually show that drugs like ibuprofen and naproxen could interfere with tissue repair and slow the healing of bone, ligament, muscle, and tendon injuries. So there's no reason to try to go overboard with anti-inflammatories. I mean, and that's not even just ibuprofen. I don't take curcumin after a workout. I don't take fish oil supplements after a workout. I try to give it a little bit, you know, later in the day, so I'm not blunting that responsive inflammatory effect.
Yeah, that's the move. I mean, I feel like you got to find the balance with all these things, but it's good to remind yourself that some of that inflammation is good.
Mm-hmm. All right, so finally, we can circle back to deloading, which I talked about before. So, but before I want to get into deloading, tied to this is the idea of periodizing your programs, right? So say you have a specific goal, and that is strength. You don't want to constantly be working on strength all year round, right? You want to dial it back, change the focus a little bit, so you're giving your nervous system, So let me just explain a little bit of the difference between the way you're going to train for different goals. So if you're training for performance, say in a explosive field, like say you're a sprinter or a high jumper or something like that, you're going to want to train at very explosive loads. For instance, like you'd want to train at rep ranges around 1 to 3, right? Because you're recruiting all of your muscle fibers. So when you use those high loads, you tend to recruit the fast twitch muscle fibers much more. So you're going to want to use loads that are, you know, 90% of your one rep maximum. And you're going to want to do that, but you can't do that all the time. So then you back up and do what would be somewhat like either a strength workout or a bodybuilding workout. And so a strength workout would entail, things of like in a rep range of like 3 to 5. Most people like to go like a 5x5 program, things like that. But, you know, and there's obviously there's the joke that anything more than 6 reps is cardio for the strength for the who are those? Those
I
are the
feel
power
like
lifters.
That applies to you sometimes, though.
No, I mean, I try to keep mine between 6 and 10 reps because I like to do, you know, functional. I don't like to do fully bodybuilding training. I try to keep it, you know, somewhere in between bodybuilding and strength.
Got it. But I still feel like you're like, you're at least like, hey, 10 to 15 reps counts as cardio. That's you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, if you're supersetting those, I mean, it definitely could count as cardio.
Well, I mean, it is on leg day.
It's brutal. But I mean, technically, you're going to want to keep in the mid range, you know, like capping at 5 or 6 for strength workouts. And then bodybuilding is going to be up towards like 8, 12, sometimes 15, 20 reps, depending on what you're doing and how you're approaching it. So with periodization is, say your goal is, like I said, strength. Well, then you'll do 6 weeks of strength and then deload for maybe a week and then move on to, say, 4 weeks of bodybuilding and then deload and then move back to 6 weeks of strength. There's a bunch of different options and ways that you can approach this, and different coaches will tell you different things, but that's just kind of like the bare bones of just one example of the way you can periodize, and that you're changing your approach to training to give either your muscles a break or your nervous system a break. Say, because if you're training for performance and strength at low reps and you know, closer to your one rep maximum, that's going to tax your central nervous system. And there's different ways that you can test whether or not your central nervous system is taxed. We don't have to get into all of them, but you know, something like very quick taps with your finger. There's an app that you tap on it and see how many times you can tap it within a minute. And then if that slows down, it means your nervous system is taxed. I know, I actually like, I like to do a lot of agility ladder stuff, you know, for like football and soccer, the way we used to do back in the day. But I can always tell on my footwork, if my footwork is too slow and I'm not able to have the response of really getting in and out of that ladder, I know that my nervous system is too taxed, you know. So that's my test. And there's also a grip test. You know, you can take a ground scale, squeeze it, you know, see what your normal one is, just squeeze it with both hands, pick it up. And then if you pick it up, you know, the next week and your grip is weaker, then that's an indication that your nervous system is somewhat taxed, right? So like I said, you know, your performance and strength based training, which is going to be lower rep, is going to tax your nervous system. The bodybuilding style training with higher reps, higher amount of volume sets and reps in terms of just destroying the muscle fiber, that's going to need, you're going to want to deload from that and decrease the amount of volume. But number one, the number one thing to keep in mind is when you deload, it doesn't mean you take a week off. You just decrease the load, which is the amount of weight you're using. You decrease the reps, the sets. You just make sure that you're at least getting, I would say, 4 decent sets that week per muscle group. 4 is about the minimum amount of volume you need to maintain muscle mass, like 4 sets taken to failure of a decent amount of load. And then the rest is just backing off and chilling out and kind of giving your body a break. So look into that, look into periodization and deloading, but that's a huge thing.
Yeah, I think also good timing on this, if you're on vacation, but you still have some kind of crappy gym set up, you could use that as like a deload week. That would be a good time, especially mm-hmm. if they don't have super heavy weight or... it's just a good time to do it on vacation. Or of course you can use vacation for a week off working out, which might not be a bad thing as long as you're getting some movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not really applicable right now because not too many people have stayed on their intense training regimen right now throughout the quarantine. I mean, I know me personally, we recently just had somebody loan us their Olympic size barbell. It's a curl bar, but I'm using it as a barbell. And that's the first time I was able to use heavier loads than my 55-pound dumbbells with like a resistance band added to it, right? That was like the maximum load I was able to use for both. I mean, I could put on my weight vest and have the chain, the weighted chains, like the squat. I'm not sure if you guys saw that on Amanda's Instagram or whatever, but it's uncomfortable as hell. It actually attacks my back, attacks my neck. So like, it's just, I mean, I can put on a good 200 pounds of weight around my house between the chains, the weight vest and the dumbbells, but it's painful. So really, you know, while we're in this quarantine effect, most of you have deloaded. So you probably won't have to deal with that for another 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever. But just keep that in mind. That's a huge issue. If you feel that you're a little bit overtaxed, you feel like your training effort is declining, it's probably a good time for a deload.
Absolutely. Shout out to Sohi Lee Fit for the bar. I think Chris was so excited when we did get the big easy bar. to work out at home. I mean, I, you know, the weight at home was fine for me. It worked fine for me. But as Chris was a lot heavier weight, he really needed something like this.
Oh, that's game changer. All right, last, we just want to kind of talk about two things that a lot of people tout as benefits for recovery, but may not necessarily recover, help you with recovery in the way that you think. And those are ice baths and cryotherapy. And so it's pretty much the same argument for both of them. So there are several studies that suggest that the reduction in swelling that comes from an ice bath could also hinder the recovery process, since the swelling is essential for muscles' recovery and gain their strength, right? It's like we were talking about before with the inflammation. So basically the summary is this, that these ice baths and these cryotherapies may help with our perception of pain. Same thing with the massages and foam rolling. It may help blunt the feelings of external soreness in the muscles, but that doesn't mean that it's actually beneficial for the muscle fiber for tissue repair.
And also remember that it might have other health benefits, or for example, like when you do an ice bath and then you sleep really well at night because it took a lot out of you, mm-hmm. that can help with recovery. So remember that just because it doesn't have these very scientific studied benefits, that it might not have an array of other benefits, and you'd notice you feel better, your mood's better, and all of those things. We're not going to take that away from you and keep that in your routine. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and there's also the placebo effect. I mean, there was another study that showed that there was no difference in the placebo, which in this instance was a quote unquote recovery oil. And then, so there was no difference between the recovery oil and the ice bath group in terms of the feeling of positive recovery. But nonetheless, if you feel like that and you feel better at the end of it, then again, that's like the subjective intrinsic feeling that we have associated with, like we were talking about before. If it supports your mood, if it reduces your stress, if it's just something that makes you feel better overall, I mean, for lack of a better term, then we're not going to say don't do it. But we also don't want you to have the wrong motives for going about something. If you think that you're going to step into that ice bath and you're going to recover faster so you can train for your marathon the next day, as opposed to giving your body an actual rest.
Yeah, that's a really good point. But I will say, I think for the ice bath, for me, yeah, it's sleep. I feel like I do sleep better that night, or like it's just a lot. Like if you work out and do an ice bath, I sleep very well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's crazy because there's actually a study where they showed that where there was like, they iced one leg after a cycling workout and then did not ice the other. And actually the study found that the muscular benefits from exercise were greater in the leg that didn't get iced. And they think it's because of the reduction in inflammation.
So is that key to basically what you and I discussed before this podcast is timing? Like it's not really great to do ice bath or cryo before or directly after your workout. You really want to space it out to a certain extent or use it on your rest day. So right. you don't get a reduction in that beneficial inflammation. Yeah. So definitely wait a few hours after you're done working out. But I will say cryo is a very fun experience. Chris and I did it together. I've done mm-hmm. it with a few friends. It feels good. It definitely boosts my mood. I definitely think there are some other benefits, but be wary of it for recovery and try not to do it right after your workout.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for listening to today's episode. We hope you got a lot of value. Like I said, we're going to do a part two where we talk about more surgery and injury recovery. But this is helpful for making sure you feel good overall and making sure that you don't neglect this important component of working out is the rest and recovery part of it.
Absolutely. And like we said before at the beginning of the podcast, make sure you check out Organifi, discount code MASTERS with an S. And you can check out all the products that they have on their website as well. And we really like the full range of products. I mean, the vegan protein powder, the red juice powder, the collagen support powder, all the stuff. I mean, it's all great. It's all beneficial. And you can fit it into your daily routine.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We'll catch you guys on the next one.
Yep. See you.
Bye.